Hi, this is Rodney Greenblatt from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show on March 1st. Today is Disability Day of Mourning, and today we'll hear an interview with Katie Carroll, Disability and Program Coordinator for the Association on Aging in New York, about the Disability Day of Mourning. We'll also hear the WGXC Congressional Report tracking the news from the New York 19, 20, and 21st Congressional Districts this week. And we'll hear national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. While it might seem to some as if COVID-19 is over, officials from both Greene and Columbia counties both reported additional deaths from the virus on February 28th. The Greene County Public Health Department reported another death and 35 new cases on February 28th. There were 84 active cases and 12 hospitalized from there. Across the Hudson River, Columbia County officials reported another COVID-19 death February 28th and 17 more cases. There were 33 active cases there and 15 people currently hospitalized with coronavirus from Columbia County.
Darrell Kemp reports for New York Now that Governor Kathy Hochul signed an executive order February 27th to halt business transactions between New York State and Russia. That move comes 4 days after Russia invaded Ukraine. The executive order from Hochul states, and I quote, "Russia and Putin have engaged in an unjustified and unprovoked attack on the sovereign nation of Ukraine," end quote. Hochul said the Office of the State Comptroller is also reviewing current state investments to see if any are beneficial to Russia. Hochul said, and I quote, "These are our fellow brothers and sisters. We worship with them. We go to restaurants with them. We celebrate their cultural festivals. They're an important part of the fabric of New York State. So an attack on their country is truly an attack on all of us," end quote. President Joe Biden also levied sanctions against Russia since the invasion. Last week, Hochul announced the newly formed Joint Security Operations Center would monitor the possibility of Russian cyber attacks on New York. And you can read more about this story at New York Now.
New York State Division of Consumer Protection on February 28th released a statement warning residents about a fraud in which consumers receive in the mail a package they did not order. Known as a brushing scam, the swindle targets a recipient and turns them into a, quote, verified buyer, unquote, for the purpose of writing fake positive online reviews of merchandise using the recipient's name. The fake reviews boost or inflate the product's ratings and sales numbers, which scammers hope results in an increase of actual sales. They also compromise the consumer's personal information at the same time. Acting Secretary of State Robert J. Rodriguez said in a statement, quote, "Receiving packages you did not order at your front steps does not mean it is your lucky day, but most likely it is coming from someone using your personal information for their financial gain. Don't fall for the brushing scams that are using you as a bait to boost their online ratings with fake information," unquote. To avoid being a victim of brushing scams, the Division of Consumer Protection offers the following tips. Recipients are under no obligation to pay for unsolicited merchandise and can consider it a gift. If a person does not want the item, it can be donated or simply disposed of. The item does not have to be returned. Report it. If the item received is organic, report it to the USDA. Other items should be reported back to local authorities. Notify the retailer. If the package received is from a third-party retailer, ask them to remove any reviews under your name. Monitor your accounts. Your personal information may have been compromised. Examine your online shopping accounts and credit card bills for signs of unusual activity and check your credit card report. Finally, change your password. More information is available by calling the DCP helpline at 1-800-697-1220 or by visiting the State Division of Consumer Protection website, and there's a link on the WGXC newsroom to that.
Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that New York's Inspector General Lucy Lang is creating a new position to coordinate investigations in prisons with the State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision. In 2021, about 60% of the complaints filed with the Inspector General's office were released to the Corrections Department. Lang said, and I quote, "There is a tendency to respond to the complaints in front of us rather than looking at the whole universe. Given the working relationship and given the internal talent, it seemed to me like there really was an opportunity to do something much bigger with our mandate to oversee corruption, fraud, and abuse at DOCES," end quote. In January, Lang's office released a report that found drug tests in state prisons had been administered improperly, leading to the potential improper discipline or extended sentences for roughly 1,600 inmates. Some of those inmates face solitary confinement after improperly administered drug tests. Lang said there were, and I quote, "excessively punitive responses for people who, it turns out, in fact, were not using drugs while they were incarcerated. That was the first investigation that I concluded when I came on as Inspector General. It reflected to me that we have actually a very strong working relationship with DOCES, notwithstanding the fact that we are essentially their watchdog," end quote. The Department of Corrections and Community Supervision oversees 17,000 employees at 52 detention facilities holding more than 30,000 incarcerated individuals, as well as overseeing the parole of more than 31,000 former inmates. The office said in a statement, and I quote, "The appointment by the Inspector General is expected to reinforce this historic working relationship, which has included regular information sharing, discussion of emerging issues and trends, and the promotion of best practices within the correction system," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Chloe Callahan reports in the Times-Union that Ulster County has plans to turn its former county jail site into a neighborhood of mixed-income, intergenerational, and workforce housing. The idea is to take a vacant building and address the ever-increasing demand for affordable housing across the entire Hudson Valley. Quote, "We've had the perfect storm around housing," unquote, said Kevin O'Connor, the CEO of Kingston-based RUPCO, a community organization that aims to make affordable housing available in Ulster County. Quote, "It's created an absolute housing crisis. The phone rings every day at RUPCO," unquote, he continued. Quote, "People are in desperate need of housing, and we have little to no resources," unquote. There have been very few affordable housing projects approved anywhere in the Hudson Valley in recent years, as most rents and prices skyrocket from an influx of newcomers, and more rooms and houses are taken off the market for short-term rentals. Meanwhile, Ulster County's old jail has been vacant since 2007. The county's new plan would replace the empty structure with 80 units of senior housing and 80 units of workforce housing that are affordable at a range of 30 to 130% of area median income. The housing units would include 1, 2, and 3-bedroom apartments, and the development will also include a community building with a gathering and fitness space for residents and local organizations. Read more about this story in the Times-Union.
The Daily Freeman reports that a laboratory confirmed cases of bird flu in Dutchess and Ulster County, according to Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County. A pheasant flock in Dutchess County and a backyard flock in Ulster County tested positive for the highly pathogenic avian influenza, or HPAI. Both flocks were killed to limit the spread of the virus. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has said that HPAI does not present an immediate public health concern to humans. No human cases of these avian influenza viruses have ever been detected in the United States. Anyone who suspects HPAI in their flock should call the State Animal Health Diagnostic Center at 607-253-3900 or email poultryhealth@cornell.edu or call the United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA, toll-free at 866-536-7593. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that New York Republicans on February 28th designated Paul Rodriguez as their candidate for state comptroller in support of his bid to challenge incumbent Tom DiNapoli in November. Rodriguez, in his acceptance speech, pledged to be, quote, a champion for the taxpayers, unquote, if elected. He last ran for office in 2021 when he was the GOP's New York City comptroller candidate. Rodriguez also vowed to shift the policy of DiNapoli's office to leverage the state pensions billions of dollars to achieve change from private sector firms New York invests in. Quote, the state pension fund should not be used to virtue signal and certainly should not be used to destroy industries like natural gas, unquote, Rodriguez said. DiNapoli has served as state controller since 2007 when he was elected by state lawmakers to replace Alan Hevesy. DiNapoli has since become the longest-serving Democratic official in the state. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, it will be cloudy with a temperature high near 43 degrees. It will be cloudy Tuesday night with a temperature low of 31 degrees. And on Wednesday, partly cloudy with a temperature high near 43 degrees. And Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 29. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
2 days, we'll hear from all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at 90.7 FM, and including we'll hear talk about how March 1st is the Disability Day of Mourning And we'll hear from Katie Carroll, the Disability and Program Coordinator for the Association on Aging in New York, about March 1st as the Disability Day of Mourning on the WGXC Morning Show on March 1st. Also that day, the Ginger Radio Hour, we'll hear from writer Gary Schintegart at 10 a.m. At 11 a.m., it's time for the Early Electromix Show, today with works from Ivo Malik, Bruno Maderna, and Dub Taylor, among others. The Radio Art Hour at 3 p.m. features work from Guillermo Gomez Pena, and it's time for Music for the Masses, listening into the soul of New Orleans on the eve of Ash Wednesday. And then the Battlefield Earth Show with Dan Seward is on live from somewhere in Columbia County, 10 to midnight on March 1st on WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The Jacob Leisler Institute for the Study of Early New York History is giving out a $500 scholarship in memory of Ruth Pawanka, an influential and well-known local historian. The award will go to a student locally looking to further their education in history. The scholarship is available to college-bound seniors graduating from a Columbia County school, and applications are due by May 1st. For more information and application guidelines, you can contact the Leisler Institute at info@jacobleiserinstitute.org. Go to the WGXC community calendar online for a link to this scholarship award information and listings of all sorts of other local community events. The Hudson Schools are hosting community budget workshops on March 1st, March 15th, and April 5th ahead of the school vote on the budget. You can turn out to learn more about the proposed budget for the Hudson Schools this year on either March 1st, March 15th, or April 5th, and find out more about these events in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather. And very early on this Tuesday, March 1st, temperatures range from 15 degrees in Smith Corner to 20 in Bull's Head. A lamb of a morning gives way to a lion of an afternoon. Around noontime, wind gusts pick up. Temperatures get up to 42 by 3 p.m. Around 4 p.m., rain starts for the lower elevations and snow could happen up in the hills. Precipitation continues till just about midnight. No major accumulation is expected. Temperatures bottom out at 29 degrees. Then we get a dry Wednesday with a high of 43. Overnight, mixed precipitation enters the area as temperatures fall to 28 degrees. It should be all snow by morning. Less than a half inch of accumulation is expected. Temperatures peak at only 35 degrees on Thursday. 10 degrees overnight takes us into a dry Friday with a high of 33. Sunset today will be at 5:30 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:27 a.m. Looking way up, we see a new incoming plasma stream is due to arrive on Friday. So the wind speed is currently 525 kilometers per second at 8.1 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair below 15 MHz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 65. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Anna Friz of Santa Cruz, California. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. And what do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. And, well, you're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money. And then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
The New York Immigration Coalition is among the groups urging the U.S. to take in as many Ukrainian refugees as possible as Ukraine faces an ongoing invasion by Russia. New York has roughly 150,000 Ukrainian residents, the largest population in the nation. Governor Kathy Hochul has said New York is prepared to coordinate with the Biden administration to accept refugees fleeing the conflict. Nicole Kata with the New York Immigration Coalition hopes to see resources directed to beefing up the refugee program.
It's an absolutely devastating week for Ukrainians, both at home and abroad. And our strongest message is that the NYIC will always stand with those seeking a safe haven from violence and war. And we're urging the United States to take as many refugees in as possible.
Kata says the U.S. needs to strengthen and rebuild its refugee program after the former Trump administration gutted it. The former president halted the program multiple times and set the ceiling for admitting refugees lower than ever. More than 100 recipients of DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, and more than 1,700 international students are from Ukraine. Qatar hopes the Biden administration will put measures into place protecting them from deportation.
We're calling for an immediate designation of temporary protected status or deferred enforced departure or special student relief for the tens of thousands of Ukrainians who are in the United States already and without a permanent status in the U.S.
Special student relief refers to a Homeland Security program that removes visa restrictions for students, such as duration of stay and ability to work off campus when emergent circumstances occur, such as war or military conflict. This is Lily Bolke with New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
From the 2022 album The Long Count, that was Debit and Third Night on the radio at WGXC.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
There is no debate. These are war crimes.
At an emergency session of the United Nations, Ukraine representative Sergei Klizlytcha described scenes from the Russian invasion.
Russia is attacking hospitals, mobile aid brigades, and ambulances. This is not the action of a state with a legitimate security concern.
Ukrainian and Russian delegates held direct negotiations, but no compromise was reached. As the invasion entered its sixth day, UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Martin Griffiths reported a rapidly growing humanitarian crisis.
Civilian children, women, and men have been injured and killed. Homes have been damaged.
It's estimated more than 500,000 refugees have fled Ukraine. And a dozen Russian diplomats were expelled from the UN for, quote, espionage activities. There are unconfirmed reports Russia used a thermobaric weapon known as a vacuum bomb in Ukraine Monday. When asked if Americans should be concerned about nuclear war, President Joe Biden said no. The conflict is expected to be a top talking point during Biden's first State of the Union address tonight at 9 p.m. Biden will present his plan to lower costs for Americans by making more products in the U.S., promoting fair competition, strengthening supply chains, and eliminating barriers to well-paying jobs. He's also expected to call on Congress to address rising inflation. Meanwhile, a new Yahoo News YouGov poll found 41% of U.S. adults surveyed approve of the president's performance, while 53% disapprove. More than 6 in 10 Americans said Biden has not kept most of his campaign promises. President Biden's Supreme Court nominee, Ketanji Brown Jackson, will hold her first meetings with Senate leadership from both parties on Wednesday. During a Black History Month event at the White House Monday, Vice President Kamala Harris praised Jackson as a phenomenal justice.
She has a brilliant mind and a record of excellence, a record that proves she will administer equal justice.
Jackson could be confirmed by the Senate before the chamber's Easter break. Legislation to classify lynching as a federal hate crime was passed by the House. The passage comes more than 120 years after the first federal anti-lynching bill was introduced by then-Representative George Henry White, who was the only Black member of Congress at the time. Congressman Ted Deutsch of Florida is now the 31st House Republican who will not run for re-election in November. So far, only 13 House Republicans have said they will not seek another term. Convoys of truckers are headed towards the nation's capital, pushing off from various starting points throughout the country. Mike Landis, organizer of the People's Convoy, says they are fighting for health freedom.
We want this government to bring back the Constitution by ending the Emergency Powers Act.
The convoys are expected in Washington, D.C. by the weekend. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Next, here's the Hudson-based band Buke and Gase. From their 2022 album Buke and Gase and Ra Ra Gabor, this is the song Ponds.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Katie, welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Thanks for joining me. Disability Day of Mourning is not a topic that gets a lot of media coverage. Tell people why this is so important.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me, Blaze. So the Disability Day of Mourning is an opportunity to come together and acknowledge people who have been murdered by family or other caregivers, disabled people who have been murdered by family or other caregivers. We're talking about people of all ages, genders, races, disability types, and all over the world.
It really is just, it's unfathomable to think why anyone would murder a disabled person because they're viewed as a burden. And yet the, I don't want to say mass killing of disabled people, but because it is non-discriminatory, as you just said, why do these things happen?
That's a really interesting question, Blaze. So you use the word unfathomable. I also think it's unfathomable. However, plenty of people don't think it's unfathomable. And when we look at particularly media coverage of these murders, we tend to see a pattern. And I would like to refer people to the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, who really helps make the Disability Day of Mourning happen. And the Anti-Filicide Toolkit goes into a lot of this. But basically, when we look at the media coverage of these murders, we see a disturbing trend, one in which the murderers are often cast as the victims. We see community members coming out talking in support of the murderers, lightened sentencing, reasons given, all kinds of reasons given for why their actions were justified in some way. Those reasons are often things like the disabled person was a burden to them. They're better off dead. They just, things like that. And so unfortunately, it's not unfathomable. And this day of mourning is not just, it's not just a vigil, but it's an educational opportunity. It's meant to bring awareness to this really disturbing trend.
For sure. Katie Carroll from the Association of Aging New York joining me, Blaze Bryant, here on Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Why March 1st?
I don't know.
Because it really is interesting. I mean, at least when you kind of break it down here in New York's sphere of things, because that's a month away from when the state budget is passed, even though that's not how it works in most states. But it certainly is interesting that we celebrate it on March 1st, which really, in the years that I've been doing disability advocacy with you, really seems to be the beginning of the sprint to the legislators and other elected officials to voice what we are for, what we oppose, and frankly, what we need.
On the topic of, so you mentioned the state budget and state activity, and I have two thoughts about that. One is that I do think part of the Disability Day of Mourning is meant to get away from this idea that these murders are justified when people have a lack of services. And I believe, I think many other people believe, that there is a significant lack of services and support and funding behind those things for people with disabilities. However, plenty of people who do not have adequate services do not murder their family members or the people who rely upon them. So I think we can do both things. We can bring attention to the fact that it is never okay. It is never justified to murder someone with a disability because they have a disability or because you view them as a burden. And we can simultaneously advocate for better resources. And when it comes to action, or you mentioned state, there are a couple things that people can do to advocate to fight against this trend. One would be calling out the media when they in their judgments about the person who was murdered or the murderer themselves. We need to call out instances of victim blaming, of justification. We also need to be vigilant, and if we think that someone is in danger, if someone is at risk of abuse, we need to know where to go to report those things. and prevent harm to our disabled siblings.
Absolutely. And really the only time, at least in recent memory, where the murder of disabled people has been in the spotlight is because of places like the Albany, or I should say the Times Union, since they now cover the Hudson Valley, have really shined a spotlight on what happened in nursing homes because of the executive orders and the policies of the former governor. Yet I highly doubt that is going to get the same amount of play on Tuesday when we have the Disability Day of Mourning. You know, you also have an attorney background or a law background. So, you know, kind of from that lens, what can the disability community do, or really the public in general do, to make sure that the light on this issue continues to be illuminated? As and having been to a Disability Day of Mourning, the list seems nearly endless in terms of the people who are killed.
Yes, and listeners can go to disability-memorial.org, where a list is kept of people that we know of who have been who are victims of filicide, and you can see there just the diversity of people who have been murdered in this way. I work at the Association on Aging in New York, so I'll just highlight one possible answer to your question, which is really promoting understanding and awareness around elder abuse, and arming ourselves with the resources to recognize symptoms and patterns of abuse and knowing what to do about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really is such an important topic. Aging New York is working on the Disability Day of Mourning here locally with the New York Association on Independent Living and Not Dead Yet. How can people find out more information and sign up for the event Tuesday, which begins at 3:30? It is a Zoom webinar, so how can people find out more information about the event itself?
So I'm just going to direct people to the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network website. Just go ahead and do a web search for that and the Disability Day of Mourning. And they have a whole page there where you can find a vigil near you, and you can get in contact with that vigil that way. And they'll have the Facebook page and all of that information.
Absolutely. And that website, I do believe, is asan.org, if I'm spouting this off the top of my head correctly, which, you know, never a guarantee with me.
Well, actually, I'll give it to you. So it's autisticadvocacy.org.
Okay, autisticadvocacy.org. You can find out more information wherever you're listening and get involved with the Disability Day of Mourning. Katie Carroll from Aging New York, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. Really appreciate it.
And thank you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
I'm Tom Rowe with WGXC in Acre with this week's WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 19th and 20th congressional seats in New York. Current Democratic Representatives Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko vote with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website. Local congressional representatives and their opponents who want to replace them in elections later this year weighed in on Twitter on Russia's invasion of Ukraine this week. On February 22nd, Representative Antonio Delgado, a Democrat who represents New York's 19th congressional district, tweeted, quote, "Russia's invasion of eastern Ukraine constitutes a grave violation of international law and is an affront to Ukraine's sovereignty. Together, our nation, NATO allies, and EU partners must hold Putin accountable," unquote. Mark Molinaro, the Republican who wants to unseat Delgado, took the war as a chance to criticize the congressperson. On February 22nd, he tweeted, quote, "We have learned throughout history that silent appeasement from politicians like Antonia Delgado only leads to greater conflicts. We can do better. We must demand better from the Biden-Delgado administration," unquote. On February 24th, Paul Tonko, a Democrat representing the 20th Congressional District, tweeted, quote, "I strongly condemn Vladimir Putin's unprovoked attack of Ukraine, which is in clear violation of international law. As President Biden has stated, we must quickly implement a powerful response to target Putin and his cronies with serious aggressive sanctions and continue coordinating with our allies to the fullest extent to uphold global peace," unquote. On the same day, Liz Joy, the Republican hoping to replace Tonko in Washington, D.C., called Putin's invasion, quote, "alarming and destructive," unquote. She made a rare break from former President Donald Trump by criticizing Putin and Russia, tweeting, quote, "These actions by Russia are making the world more volatile and must be stopped," unquote. Mike Wisdala reports in the Troy Record that Republican Representative Elise Stefanik made her first official tour of Rensselaer County with a visit to Harrington Farms in Brunswick earlier this week. The area is switching from territory represented by Democrat Antonio Delgado in the 19th Congressional District to part of Stefanik's 21st Congressional District in this year's approved redistricting plan. Quote, "It's great to be here in the town of Brunswick and Rensselaer County. Agriculture is a huge opportunity, a priority of mine since I've represented the North Country. I represent thousands of hardworking dairy farmers, and this is going to continue to be a priority in the next Congress. We have the Farm Bill coming up in the next Congress, so my office is known for working with our local stakeholders, working with our agricultural leaders to deliver results that they need, because it is the lifeblood, it is the backbone of our local upstate and North Country economy," unquote, Stefanik said. Quote, "For the new voters in Rensselaer County, you should know that I am a worker who is always laser-focused on delivering results to you, whether it's helping our veterans, helping our seniors. I have a record of making sure that your priorities and your concerns have a seat at the highest levels of government," unquote, Stefanik said. Last year, the Republican from Schuylerville objected to certifying the results of the 2020 election just hours after a riotous mob broke into the U.S. Capitol and attempted to overthrow the government. Read more about the story in the Troy Record. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that on February 25th, Bridie Farrell ended her campaign for the 21st Congressional District seat now held by Republican Elise Stefanik. Farrell was among several Democrats who are seeking to replace Stefanik in Washington, D.C. Apparently, Farrell was counting on Democrats in the legislature to draw different district lines. Quote, "After closely reviewing the new district maps that emerged from the state legislators' redistricting process, I've decided to end my race for the U.S. House of Representatives," unquote, said Farrell, a former U.S. speed skater. Quote, "New York's 21st district now has a 23-point Republican advantage instead of the 8-point margin it had when I launched my campaign. I no longer see a path to victory for a Democrat in this race," unquote. The new lines include the northern half of Rensselaer County in the 21st district, Democrat Ezra Watson, a technician who lives in Wilton, Matt Castelli, a former CIA and counterterrorism official who lives in the town of Saratoga, and attorney Matt Pittardi of Whitehall are the other Democrats so far announced for a June primary election. Republican Lonnie Coons will challenge Stefanik in that primary election. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Here's a 2022 track from the British artist Scanner from his album Structura Revisited. This is The Earthbound Fox on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we hear from Talking Heads' David Byrne and Yola Tengo, their cover of Yoko Ono's Who Has Seen the Wind from a 2022 compilation of Yoko Ono songs called Ocean Child. Next, we hear from reedist Daniel Carter and pianist Jim Klaus from their 2021 album Playing Retention. This is 2-in-1.
Thank you. do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like